Hi, this is Michael Ann Conley, and you're listening to Habits Into Health. Habits Into Health is all about helping you become healthier and happier by turning around habitual behaviors that create problems for yourself and others. Today's show is all about how you can know whether your habit is an addiction or just a habit. We'll explore the difference, but before we talk about this, let's take our usual Habits Into Health moment to support you in collecting yourself. If you're new to this show, this means we take a minute or two for an experiential exercise. In this busy world today, we're so trained to think first and to feel last that we've come to equate thinking with being. But there are other voices in you than the one in your head. The one in your head only seems to run the show because it operates on a faster cycle. But after all, don't children's metabolisms run faster than adults? That doesn't mean we give them the keys to the car. It turns out, as more and more people are starting to realize, our physical experience of ourselves is our source for recognizing who we are. It's not what we think that matters, it's what we do that counts. You know yourself not because the youngest part of your brain, the part that's in charge of what we call thinking, knows something, but because one of the functions of this part of your brain is to collect all of your experiences. This includes your ability to sense the signals that old habits could be sneaking their way back in. So let's get started. Initially, be attentive to your thoughts. Not so much what you're thinking, but just the movement of how your thoughts shift, change, and flow. You might be a person who sees thoughts as if you were reading words. Perhaps you hear thoughts as if you're hearing your own voice. Maybe what you experience are pictures or images. Or you might experience thoughts as memories or associations, which you could think of as links the brain makes between different experiences. And it's possible you experience all of these. You just haven't differentiated them. Now, as you consider this, let your attention shift to where you experience yourself as you do what you call thinking. This question may seem unusual. Perhaps you've never been attentive to where you think, and it may not be easy to answer initially. So I often encourage people to deliberately start by feeling the senses around the head. So you can start by just feeling yourself around your eyes, or between your eyes, above your eyes in your forehead, or directly behind your eyes. So just notice your thinking for a minute, and be aware of any physical sensations that you experience in the area around your eyes. Alternately, as you listen to my voice, notice what happens energetically around your ears or inside your ears and in that space in your head between your ears. Just notice where you experience listening. And as another example, without speaking, say something to yourself and be attentive to what happens with your lips, inside your mouth, with your tongue, inside your throat. Over time, with practice, you can become adept at recognizing these physiological experiences of thinking. It's not what we're typically taught to do, but it does happen. Thoughts have action, and actions are experienced primarily as muscular energy, sometimes also as a neurological kinetic energy. And whether you can only practice this very briefly or for many minutes at a time, this is a way to take charge of your own rhythm. It is a practice, and practice creates progress. With this practice, you can learn attunement to your whole self. You can let your body lead so that your mind doesn't have to. Let's take a transitional moment here before we discuss our topic, just to remind you that you're listening to Habits Into Health, where we offer information and inspiration and most importantly, opportunities to connect with yourself in a way that supports you in finding your own rhythm, whatever that may be. My name is Michael Ann Conley, and I'm interested in knowing what you're learning that's valuable or useful to you. What are you struggling with? Visit habitsintohealth.com to let us know. We welcome your comments on any podcast. And if you want to discover ways to soften a problem habit so it doesn't control you, ask for a free self-assessment questionnaire as well. Let's talk about our topic. How you can know whether your habit is just a habit or if it's an addiction. Let's place sort of some ground rules here. In the first place, it is human to habituate. It is in our nature to learn behaviors and then through repetition to develop habits. And this frees us from having to learn everyday activities over and over again so that we can be creative at a different level than other mammals. Somehow, we humans have been given a gift that allows us to be creative. For instance, we turned fire from a random act of nature into an event and experience that we replicated. And over time, this has occurred so much that with very little effort, we don't even think about how magnificent this is at all. We took that fire and created objects to support our existence, whether they were implements to feed ourselves or structures to protect us from the changes in weather and climate. The point is that without the ability to learn tasks and delegate them to a part of ourselves that makes them routine, we would have to relearn how to walk and talk each and every day. We would lack the ability to remember how to do things, much less remember how we think. If you've ever seen the movie 50 First Dates, a main character only remembers for a day. There's a minor character who doesn't remember much beyond a minute. Imagine what this kind of life would be like. So the first thing is to be grateful that you have habits. It frees you for bigger things. Now, I like to use a continuum model for most experiences of life. So, when it comes to habit change, everyday routine habits, like brushing your teeth before you dress, or the other way around, well, they're relatively problem-free. And that fits on one end of the continuum. As we move along the continuum, there are habits that you have, or as I like to say, habits that have you, where you're not freed up, and although they are routine, these habits create problems for you. They can feel imprisoning, and you can end up being preoccupied with them, even though other people might not be bothered at all. This could include, for instance, the extra 10 pounds that you're carrying, but that doesn't bother your spouse or family at all. It might include how you pick at your teeth after a meal, and your sweetheart might think it's endearing. Moving along the continuum, there are habits that may be problematic, but not so much to us, more to others. Someone doesn't like the way you talk, or they're bothered by the way you dress. I mean, if someone doesn't like the way you dress, that's a so what, because how you dress doesn't impair their life. They can always choose to leave the scene. And most of the time, you'll just realize it's their problem, maybe based on their own habits. Then there are habits that even if we don't think they're problematic, they actually are, because when we engage in them, it has an impact on others in ways that create difficulties, and probably also has an impact on us. Secondhand smoke is an example. In the U.S., the habit of smoking nicotine is recognized as a health hazard, not just for the person who smokes, but for other people who inhale the smoke. These days in the United States, smokers are on the defensive, but this was not always the case. It used to be commonly believed that everyone should have the right to smoke. But studies started coming in showing the health consequences, especially for children, of being around smokers and around cigarette smoke. So a public policy movement to restrict smoking began to take hold in most of the 50 states in the nation. This is not necessarily true in other countries, but as the incidence of smoking decreases in the U.S., it is increasing in many other countries where there are few, if any, legal restrictions around smoking. It is in this last area of the habit continuum that I place addiction. Now, that word is thrown around a lot, kind of loosely. when I first entered my current work as an addiction treatment specialist, the term addiction applied primarily to alcoholism and drug abuse. Over time, it's been applied to other habits as well. Other serious habits, I mean. The American Society of Addiction Medicine, or ASAM, defines addiction as, quote, a primary chronic disease of brain reward, motivation, memory, and related circuitry. And then they say, quote, dysfunction in these circuits leads to characteristic biological, psychological, social, and spiritual manifestations. This is reflected in an individual pathologically pursuing reward and or relief by substance use and other behaviors. So that ends that quote. Now there's a list of characteristics. According to ASAM, addiction involves 1, the inability to consistently abstain from a behavior. 2, impairment in behavioral control. 3, craving. 4, diminished recognition of significant problems with one's behaviors and interpersonal relationships. And 5, a dysfunctional emotional response. So you might have a habit, like chewing your fingernails, that you can't consistently abstain from. It might impair behavioral control. You might have difficulty regulating that. It's possible that you might feel craving, but it's not likely that you have a diminished recognition of this problem. So that wouldn't fully fit an addiction, per se. The other thing that ASAM says is addiction is considered a chronic disease because it shares traits of all chronic diseases, cycles of relapse and remission, and most importantly, a progressive course. And what that means is that without treatment or active recovery support, the habit leads to disability or premature death. Most likely, for most people, chewing fingernails isn't going to lead to disability or premature death. So there's just an example. It's a habit, could create problems for yourself or others, but it's probably not considered an addiction. So to summarize, in Habits into Health, we think of all habits on a continuum, from the routine and innocuous to behaviors that bother the person internally or other people around the person, but don't threaten health or well-being, particularly, to habits that are potentially life-threatening. Addictions are extreme habits that have those serious consequences. They usually have a physiological component that complicates matters. So, nicotine, for instance. Well, it's often harder to get free of that than alcohol. I've worked with many, many recovering alcoholics who said it was much harder for them to stop smoking than it was for them to stop drinking. But not all addictions impact all people similarly. Many people drink, but aren't addicted. After the Vietnam War, it became recognized that many soldiers who used heroin during the war in Vietnam returned home and never used heroin again, while others used it and became hooked for life. Some people gamble, but not to such an extent that it creates chaos in their lives and the lives of others. Many people engage in frequent sexual activity that affirms their aliveness. And others exhibit the same behavior to prevent emptiness. One is life-affirming, the other, quite possibly, is based on an addictive process. Whether a behavior, ultimately, is a habit or an addiction is measured by the consequences the habit has for you, but also for others. And it may be measured by how challenged you are in changing it, as well as whether your well-being and life are at risk from doing it. But the bottom line is the decision about whether your problem habit is just that, a habit, or if it's an addiction, is up to you. If you want to know more, visit habitsintohealth.com and click the link to get a self-assessment questionnaire. It asks a series of questions that can guide you about this. But regardless, if you're bothered by a behavior that has the better of you, and you're trying to deal with it on your own, but that hasn't given you the results or satisfaction you want, consider getting reinforcement and support. Blame and judgment get in the way of creating any kind of change. So in Habits into Health, we start small and we encourage kindness. I'm going to sign off for now. This is Michael Ann Conley, and you've been listening to Habits into Health. I support you in turning your old habits around into healthy possibilities for your future. Thanks for joining me.